Will the House come to order? Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please take the roll?
37 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No member is excused from the call of the House today.
Our chaplain today is Bishop Michael Kennedy. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
Let us pray. Lord God, in our private and personal lives, doing the right thing, making the right choice, is not always easy. Sometimes it is difficult even to know the noblest course to follow. In those decisions that are most serious, there are often no blacks or whites, only grays. And even when the moral course is clear, the corresponding action can be hard to come by. We need so much of wisdom and of courage. Lord, if all of this is true in our individual lives, how much truer it becomes for those involved in public life. Here issues can be so complex, so intertwined, that it would take the wisdom of Solomon to know what is right. And the pressures brought to bear on public and elected men and women come from every side. Friends, constituents, lobbyists, colleagues, even from within. Fortitude, integrity, and a certain daring are qualities sorely needed. And so, dear God, let these thoughts be prayer. Wisdom, honor, and courage be your gifts to this house and to all who labor here. Amen.
Representative Navarre, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask unanimous consent that prayer be spread on the journal.
Are there any objections as to having the prayer spread upon the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the legislative journal for the 64th and the 65th legislative day?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 64th and 65th days.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House journals for the 64th and 65th legislative days as certified be approved by the House.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journals before you today? Hearing no objections, the journals have been approved. Do we have any guests for introduction? Representative Palmer.
We have some visitors this morning from the Juno Douglas High School government class. I'd like to ask them to stand up, please, and if you'd help me, please welcome them.
Representative Hoffman.
I have a constituent here from Bethel that's down here for the Alaska Women's Commission, Mary Pete, and I'd like the body to help me welcome her.
Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today in Gallery B, we have our partners with NANA, with Cameco. Help me welcome four gentlemen today. There are Dr. Norman Keevil, who is the chairman of the board of Cameco, Bob Halbeaver, president and executive officer, Hank Degree, president Cameco Alaska, and Ralph Hargrave, vice president and general manager of Cameco.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery D, I have an old friend and Kodiak constituent, former teacher and fisherwoman, Judith Phillips.
Representative Springer.
In Gallery B, I have a constituent constituent of mine, Loretta Bullock. She is here with the Alaska Women's Commission.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Pettijohn and I have a constituent in Gallery B who's also the head of the Alaska Women's Commission. Please help me welcome Chris Chapman.
Representative Davis.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I see in Gallery B we have a neighbor of one of our pages, a constituent of mine, Pat Oaks.
Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also in Gallery B is a constituent and friend, Cindy Spaniers.
Any further guests for introduction? Messages from the governor.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate has approved the following citation that has been transmitted to enrolling, honoring James Simpson McKinnon, and has approved the following citations, and they are transmitted for consideration. Honoring George Van Brunt's service at Cape St. Elias Light Station, honoring Hansi Gnad, All-American Basketball Team 1987, and honoring Jesse J.J. Jackson, All-American 1987.
The rules for our consideration will be sent to Rules Committee for calendaring.
The Senate has passed and returned Committee Substitute for House Bill 68, State Affairs, an act relating to the authority of fire department officers, and this bill has been sent to enrolling. The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted for consideration. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 20, by Binkley, Fakes, Ferencamp, Hensley, Fisher, Josephson, Coghill, Rohde, Sturgiluski, Euling, and Zemanski, relating to National Tourism Week.
One standing committee, Labor and Commerce.
Senate Bill 139, by the Rules Committee, an act relating to wages and benefits for certain legislative employees and providing for an effective date.
One standing committee, Rules.
Senate Bill 143, by Bennett and Fakes, an act changing the date the proposed general appropriation bill becomes public.
State Affairs and the Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications that should come before this body?
No, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to reports of standing committees.
From the Committee on Transportation, we've received recommendations of appointment on Mr. Mark Hickey as Commissioner of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and recommends the appointment. The report was assigned due, recommend Boucher, Pierce, and Cato. Having no recommendation, Hudson, Springer, and Miller. And on Mr. Paul Taylor to the Board of Marine Pilots, it's recommended do confirm Boucher, Hudson, Springer, Pierce, Cato, and Miller. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Concurrent Resolution 16 relating to the promotion of the Iditarod race, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 16, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman. Signing do pass, Boucher, Davidson, Menard, Furness, Ellis, Donnelly, and Kopanen. House Concurrent Resolution Number 16 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Joint Resolution 19, relating to resident hire on federal projects in the state, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 19, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Sund, Chairman. Signing do pass, Sund, Elmer, Grunberg, Navarre, and Cotton. House Joint Resolution Number 19 appears on today's calendar. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Joint Resolution 22, relating to an agreement between the Department of Defense and the Alaska Department of Labor, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman. Signing do pass, Ellis, Menard, Kopanen, Davidson, and Donnelly. House Joint Resolution Number 22 appears on today's calendar. The Hess Committee has considered House Bill 33, relating to inoperative schools, recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. Report was signed by the co-chairs, Kopanen and Ellis. Signing do pass, Donnelly, Grunberg, Hudson, Kopanen, Hanley, Phillips, and Ellis. House Bill 33 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 52 relating to motor vehicle forfeiture, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 52 Judiciary with the same title, recommends it do pass, and recommends also an additional referral to the Finance Committee. The report was signed by Elmer, Chairman, and signing do pass, Grunberg, Elmer, Cotton, Navarre, Barn, and Barnes. Taylor has no recommendation, and they've also attached three fiscal notes. House Bill 52.
House Bill 52 will now have a finance referral since it has three fiscal notes.
The Hess Committee has considered House Bill 76, relating to the minimum age for entering public school kindergarten, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 76 Hess with a new title, reports it back as follows with a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by the co-chairs Kopanen and Ellis. Signing Dupass, Phillips, Hanley, and Ellis. Having no recommendation, Donnelly, Grunberg, Hudson, and Kopanen. House Bill 76 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 88 relating to private causes of action by businesses under the Alaska Unfair Trade Practices and Consumer Protection Act. Recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 88 Judiciary with a new title and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Sun Chairman, concurring Sun, Navarre, Omer, Grunberg, Taylor, and Barnes. House Bill 88 has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 112, servicing of certain residential housing mortgage loans purchased by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note with analysis. Report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, signing do pass, Menard, Kopanen, Davidson, Ellis, and Boucher. Having no recommendation, Furness and Donnelly. House Bill 112 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Transportation Committee has considered House Bill 155, relating to the change, relocation, or removal of utility facilities incident to the construction of road or other projects by a municipality, recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Cato, Chairman, concurring Boucher, Hudson, Cato, and Springer. House Bill 155 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 181, establishing Marmot Day and designating the official state marmot. Recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Omer, Chairman, concurring Boucher, Martin, Menard, Omer, and Donnelly. Hoffman signed do not pass. House Bill 181 has a further referral to the Resources Committee. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered Senate Bill 25 amended, providing a special assessment for private airports open for public use. Recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Springer, Chairman, concurring Cato, Zawacki, and Springer. Herman signed no recommendation. Senate Bill 25 has a further referral to the Transportation Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered Senate Bill 131 amended, regulating the sale and use of TBT-based marine anti-fouling paints and coatings. Recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, concurring Ellis, Davidson, Menard, Kopanen, and Donnelly. Furness has no recommendation. Senate Bill 131 has a further referral to the Resources Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Norman Nault by Representative Swackhammer and Navarre. Citation honoring Petersburg High School by Representatives Sund and Taylor and Senator Jones.
Rules for calendaring.
House Joint Resolution 24 by Boyer, Kopanen, Navarre, Hudson, Davidson, Pierce, Brown, Grusendorf, Davis, Ellis, Swackhammer, Frank, Donnelly, Rieger, Sund, Springer, Grunberg, and Collins. Encouraging federal funding for vocational education and job training.
Health, education, and social services.
House Joint Resolution 25 by Zawacki, Navarre, Grunberg, Martin, Schultz, and Taylor, relating to federal regulation of the insurance industry.
Labor and Commerce and the Judiciary Committee.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill 173 by Pierce and Hanley, an act relating to the international airports in Anchorage and Fairbanks and establishing the Alaska International Airport Authority and providing for an effective date.
Two standing committees, Transportation and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 205 by Navarre, an act relating to regulation of the practice of occupational therapy and physical therapy and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce, Hess, and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 206 with a governor's letter and a zero fiscal note. By the Rules Committee, by request of the governor, an act relating to the plumbing code.
Labor and Commerce, Finance.
House Bill 207 by Davis, Armour, Brown, Martin, Gall, and Taylor, an act relating to capital gains on sales of investments from the Alaska Permanent Fund and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs, Judiciary, and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 208 by Davis, Ulmer, Brown, Martin, and Taylor, an act making a special appropriation from the earnings reserve account to the principal of the Permanent Fund and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 209 by Larson, Menard, Hudson, and Ulmer, an act relating to establishment of a port authority by a municipality.
Community and Regional Affairs and the Transportation Committee.
House Bill 210 by Ulmer, an act establishing the Point Bridge at State Park and providing for an effective date.
Resources, Finance.
House Bill 211 by Rieger, an act suspending expenditures under certain capital appropriations and providing for an effective date.
Finance Committee.
House Bill 212 by Pierce, Barnes, Frank, Furness, Hanley, Martin, Menard, Miller, Pettijohn, Schultz, Taylor, and Zawacki, an act relating to the issuance of permits and consistency determinations.
Resources, CRA, and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 213 by Hoffman, Adams, Davidson, Grusendorf, Springer, Herman, and Wallace, an act relating to allocation of federal aid highway funds and providing for an effective date.
Transportation and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 214 by Menard and Brown. Hoffman, excuse me. An act relating to big game animals affected by operations of the Alaska Railroad.
Transportation and the Resources Committee.
House Bill 215 by Boyer and Kopanen. An act relating to credited service under the Public Employees Retirement System for certain periods of leave of absence without pay and providing for an effective date.
Two standing committees, State Affairs and Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the consideration of the daily calendar. Mr. Majority Leader.
May we please have a brief at ease?
Would the House please stand at ease? Would the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we were about to enter the daily calendar. Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I bring up reconsideration of House Bill 74.
House Bill 74. Would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 74, Transportation Amended by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to motorcycle license plates.
And the bill is before us in third reading. Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent. We return to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment.
Are there any objections? Any objections? Hearing no objection, the bill is before us in second reading. Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I move amendment number two. I believe the members have it on their desk. Ask unanimous consent.
The clerk has amendment number two on her desk.
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
I believe the members have that amendment as well. This amendment was brought to my attention, or this issue was brought to my attention by the North Star chapter of the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association, and there's a region that Alaska belongs to, including Hawaii, California, Nevada, and their interest, of course, is to recognize a significant event in American history. And other states have already done this, and California is one of the states that also has this under consideration. And rather than introduce legislation, I noticed this license plate bill was on the floor and thought that this would be an appropriate place to take care of it. The information we have from the person who is the head of the North Star Association here in Alaska suggests that there are about 35 to 40 Pearl Harbor survivors living in Alaska right now. And as a result, the loss in revenue and the expenses involved in this would be about $1,400. And I know it's unusual to consider fiscal matters on the floor like this, but I felt that at $1,400 we could probably, maybe even all of us could chip in on the thing, but I don't really believe that'll be necessary. The cost would be about $1,400, and I think it's an appropriate recognition of, again, a significant piece of American history and honoring those people who are living in Alaska that survived that event.
Okay, amendment number two has been moved. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to commend Representative from Eagle River for this amendment. I make note of a feeling of deja vu. For this amendment, a similar piece of legislation was considered during the 13th legislature, during a time when another member held that same seat. And with that in mind, Mr. Speaker, I'm very pleased to stand and support this amendment today.
Representative Phillips.
Speaker, I have a couple questions. First of all, is there supposed to be a fiscal note with this amendment? And number two, if you read it, it says the design and the color of Pearl Harbor survivors or prisoner of war plates shall be solely within the discretion of the commissioner. Does that mean it's going to be a different color and lettering than everybody else on the roads?
Representative Adams, to the fiscal note.
Yes, on the fiscal note. As you know, the fiscal note that originally went with the bill was bringing in revenues approximately $7,500. If this particular piece of legislation does pass the other body in conference committee, that the adjustment would be on the fiscal note in revenues less the $1,400. They're bringing it down to approximately $6,100. That's where we deal with the fiscal note if in case this particular piece of legislation does pass both bodies.
Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In response to the other question, as the member from Eagle River pointed out, the commissioner does now have the sole discretion on design and color for POW plates, and this, of course, adds Pearl Harbor survivors to that language, so that wouldn't change any.
Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to lend my support to this amendment. I think it's a good one, and as chairman of the Public Safety Subcommittee, I'm sure that we will find that $1,400 within the budget wherever it's needed to accomplish this. Thank you.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, maybe if I could ask a question to the person sponsoring the amendment. Would this include the people who survived the attack on Dutch Harbor in Alaska?
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, no. It's real clear that it only applied to a person who was on active military duty in Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941.
Do we have any objections to amendment number 2? Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, I think, you know, when you pass something like this, you have to take a look at the long-term view. And when I say long-term, 10, 15, 20 years from now. And the last couple of years, we had bills sort of like this, dealing with the checkoff system with the permanent fund. And now everybody wants to, you know, has a good cause to be on this thing. And I sort of view this as that. I mean, I'm sure there's other situations for veterans that are just as worthy as this, but I mean, there's only so far you can go, and I think we got to call it a policy question here, because if you do for one, you do for all.
I take it there are objections to amendment number 2. Are you ready for the Representative Taylor?
Ask a brief recess, if I might, Mr. Speaker.
Will the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had amendment number 2 before us. I understand that there's an amendment to the amendment. Would the clerk please make reference to the amendment to the amendment?
Amendment to amendment number 2 by Taylor, and it has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to move amendment to amendment number 2 and ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objections to the amendment to the amendment, Representative
just,
Taylor.
Just briefly on the amendment, Mr. Speaker. The World War II, as waged in Alaska, is known as the Forgotten War. It has had little treatment in the history books and little recognition. It only seems fitting to me that if we, the state of Alaska, are going to make a license plate to commemorate and reflect the tragedy of Pearl Harbor, that we need also to remind the nation and our state of those people who survived the surprise attack by Japanese forces on Dutch Harbor in Alaska. Aside from the territory of Hawaii, the territory of Alaska was the only other place of American soil that was attacked. And these are our own people that were involved here, and I think that we need, if we're going to give recognition to one, it only seems fitting that we should give recognition to the other. And I'm not attempting to expand this to all other conflicts or all other involvements or to all people who may have received a Purple Heart or something else. I just want to make this for Alaskans and for that one point is all. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I respectfully oppose this amendment just because I think it could get into what the other representative, Eagle River, was referring to, and it could be a long list of things and people that we'd like to commemorate by allowing them to have special license plates. I know that I just recently this year viewed a film that the state of Alaska funded called Alaska at War that did a very nice job of showing some of the old films and other discussions and people that were there in the Aleutians when Japan and the United States engaged in conflict out that way. But the Pearl Harbor Association, there are about 9,000 people that survived throughout the nation. And as I mentioned before, about 40 of them here in Alaska. So we know, for instance, what the cost would be and what the effect would be. The people that were involved in the conflict referred to by the representative from Ketchikan, I certainly don't mean any lesser regard for them, but I just felt like the Pearl Harbor Association is such a significant group and marks such a significant event in the history of the United States that they warranted special treatment, and I'd oppose the amendment.
Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's been a while since I've read the book Thousand Mile War, and some of the events described there in the battle in the Aleutian Islands are a little hazy, but as I recall, there were other encounters of bombings in the Aleutian area other than Dutch Harbor. I know Kiska Island and Attu Island were also involved in that and were similarly situated, and I would see no reason to distinguish those places in combat from Dutch Harbor. And so for the same reasons mentioned by my colleague from Eagle River, that we really don't know what the universe of people involved here and how many license plates that might involve, and I would oppose the amendment to the amendment.
Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to oppose the amendment also. I think one thing that's significant is the date of December the 7th, 1941. That was a surprise attack on an American military installation there at Pearl Harbor. The Dutch Harbor attack, I don't know if we had loss of life. The only thing that I can recall of military operation at that time were six fighter planes. I believe we eventually got in the air to repulse the second attack. But what I'm saying here is we're marking a significant date, the date in which the United States really entered World War II that had a heavy loss of life. And I do think we have to give some temperance to think today and not try to open it up to everyone as much as they probably do deserve. Thank you.
Representative Furness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we've heard a number of people this morning speak against this amendment. But let me share with the body, Mr. Speaker. I have a special concern that in Alaska, we did have a tragedy. We had people who were imprisoned, I believe, as a result of an act of war. And to my knowledge, Mr. Speaker, we've done very little to acknowledge those people. I'm not sure as to what the additional cost to this legislation that this will incur. I'm really not concerned at this point. But I think it's an appropriate amendment, and someone needs to stand up and be counted for it. And therefore, Mr. Speaker, I'll ask my colleagues this morning to give this amendment its due consideration. We have not properly honored those persons, and this is an opportunity to do so. I think we ought to support this amendment.
Representative Taylor.
Yeah, hopefully in closing, I'll make it brief. We did lose lives at Dutch Harbor. It was a surprise attack. I only designated it, Mr. Speaker, because it was a military installation. There are records available on those people who were there. And it is the single most universally recognized and historically understood attack that occurred in Alaska, aside from trying to list all of the Thousand Mile War encounters. And I think it stands for the same proposition, and it certainly speaks strongly just to Alaska, aside from, there could be, instead of just the Pearl Harbor survivors, there could be the World War II survivors, too, and we could talk about Leyte and Mindanao and some of the horrible battles of the Pacific, but I think it's only essential that we add a little token here just for that one, which does designate the forgotten war, and that's the only reason I've offered it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the amendment to amendment number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
18 yeas, 22 nays.
The amendment to amendment number 2 has failed adoption. That brings up amendment number 2 before us for consideration. Are you ready for the question? The question, are there any objections to amendment number 2? Hearing objections. The question is, shall Amendment Number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
33 yeas, 7 nays.
Amendment Number 2 has been adopted. The bill is back before us in third reading and under debate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is an Amendment Number 3 to the title on the clerk's desk, and I'm wondering if the clerk could please make reference to that.
Amendment Number 3 by Grunberg, and it is the title change, and it should be on each member's desk.
Mr. Speaker, if I may briefly speak to this.
The bill is before us in third reading, and a title change in our third reading is acceptable. Continue, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have been informed by staff that we need a technical title change, both to deal with the Amendment Number 1, which was offered previously on line 11, changing the word may to shall, and now as a result of the amendment, Amendment Number 2, which was just adopted. And this title change will encompass the subject matter of the bill. I therefore move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of Amendment Number 3.
Are there any objections to Amendment Number 3, title change? Any objections? Hearing no objections, Amendment Number 3 has been adopted. The bill is before us in third reading and under debate. Is there any debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 74, Transportation Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk please tally the board?
39 yeas, 1 nay.
Committee substitute for House Bill 74, Transportation Amended, has passed the House on reconsideration. Representative Herman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May we go up the calendar to introduction of guests, please?
Are there any objection? Hearing no objection.
Mr. Speaker, in Gallery A, I have a bunch of relatives of my staff member, Rona Sorensen, and I'd like to read their names off. These are the Webbs, Inez, Mark, Dagva, Tiffany, and Amber, and also visiting from Dillingham are Kendall Judd and Dorothy Anguson. Please help.
Any further guests for introduction? Having no further guests for introduction, this brings us back down to the calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill Number 124 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to the oil and gas conservation tax and providing for an effective date. The Resources Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Cotton, Chairman, signing do pass, Sund, Hoffman, Navarre, Cotton, and Davidson. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring, Adams, Gall, Boyer, Swackhammer, Davis, and Brown, having no recommendation for Show, Frank, Larson, and Rieger. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill Number 124 be engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the motion to advance from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
House Bill Number 124 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to the oil and gas conservation tax and providing for an effective date.
Third reading, under debate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have one question to the floor manager of the bill, the chairman of the resources, co-chairman of the Resources Committee, and it refers to the language on lines 16 and 17. There is a bracket indicating that the phrase administered and is deleted. And I'm wondering if that is intended to be a substantive change or if, in fact, that is simply a housekeeping change.
Representative Cotton?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yeah, the word from the Attorney General on that wording is superfluous and its removal is housekeeping. If I could address the bill while I'm on my feet, Mr. Speaker. The bill conforms with this administration's policy of having the industry that is being regulated pay for that regulation. The Oil and Gas Commission, as most of you know, is an independent quasi-judicial agency. It was first established in 1955, and their responsibilities include ensuring that the oil and gas drilling, production, reservoir depletion, and metering operations comply with the Oil and Gas Conservation Act. The original tax imposed in 1955 was 5 mils, and included its application also included gas, as does this bill. That legislation was repealed in 1970, and it had been a dedicated fund, and the receipts went straight to the commission. And since it was repealed in 1970, the dedicated aspect of that is no longer an option. It's available to the legislature. The tax, a conservation tax, was reimposed in 1974, and that's the tax that exists on the books today. But the operating expenses of the commission have been substantially less than, or the amount the tax would collect has been substantially less than what it costs to operate the commission. This bill would reverse that situation. I feel that the legislation is important and the appropriate method for funding the operations of the Oil and Gas Commission.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall House Bill 124 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
32 yeas, 8 nays.
House Bill 124 has passed the House.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage for House Bill 124 be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Cato.
Mr. Speaker, could we revert up the calendar to introduction of guests?
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, proceed.
I would like to introduce in Gallery A with the Older Alaskans Commission and also a newly elected council person of the Valdez City Council, a very dear personal friend of mine, Sally McAdoo. Would you help me welcome her?
Any further guests for introduction? Okay, this Representative Furness.
No, Mr. Speaker, no guests for introduction, but I would like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on House Bill 124.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on House Bill 124. Okay. Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Joint Resolution Number 19 by Donnelly, Grunberg, Boyer, Hoffman, Kopen, and Springer, and Grusendorf, relating to resident hire on federal projects in the state. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the resolution, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 19, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, signing do pass, Donnelly, Ellis, Menard, Boucher, and Kopenen. Furness has no recommendation. The Judiciary Committee has considered the resolution, recommends it be replaced with the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute, and do pass. The report was signed by Sund, Chairman, signing do pass, Sund, Ulmer, Grunberg, Navarre, and Cotton. Having no recommendation, Taylor and Barnes. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having one committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 19.
Any objection as to the adoption of the CS, Labor and Commerce? Hearing no objection, the Labor and Commerce CS has been adopted. Would the clerk please make reference to Amendment Number 1?
It's Amendment Number 1 by Martin, and it starts on page 2, line 14, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment. Ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objection, Representative Martin.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, This is a very important amendment, and I think it certainly complies with the letters that Governor Cooper has sent to our congressional delegation. If the members would refer to the second sheet of this amendment, what we have here is the congressional record that explicitly exempt union workers, saying that union workers will be considered Alaskan residents for the sake of this act. Now, I find that offensive in the sense that only a specific group is allowed to become Alaska residents without being able to live here. It completely circumvents our law and the whole intent of Alaska local hire. Mr. Speaker, Governor Cooper had written letters to the Secretary of Defense, to our congressional delegation, to Mr. John Katz, and he says in each of these letters that Alaska has a highly trained workforce available to assist all branches of the military service in construction and trade. Now, Mr. Speaker, it seems to me if we have the workers here, that we should protect them, all workers. I'm not against union people. I think they should be Alaskan citizens, and they make good citizens. But why we should exempt a specific person or group, I fail to see any reason for that. In our book, that is an extremely good book by the Department of Labor, and I know other bills are going to come up, and I think that every member should read this and see what the Department of Labor says in the first report pertaining to local hire and where our problems lie at. First, they make it very clear that the next volume is coming in January 88, and they request the policy makers, especially the legislators, to refrain from interpreting this book as it is today until they have more specific information as to where the local hire problem lies. One thing they do come out with very clearly, of the 77,000 workers who are non-residents, that 22% of them are in the construction trade. And these can be traced mainly to the union members of our Seattle local chapters, of the Tacoma chapters, and so on. And I feel that if we have these skilled laborers in Kenai, which has the highest unemployment rate right now, almost 19.6, and a lot of these are in the trade unions. Matsu Valley had the second highest unemployment rate, and a lot of these are construction workers who are available. And so if we have an exemption just for union workers, I feel that this really circumvents our whole intent of the Alaska hire problem. And I wish for the body to support this measure.
We have amendment number one before us and under debate. Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have no particular objection to a separate resolution addressing this issue to Congress, that there be some consideration given for the issue raised by the representative from East Anchorage. But in this particular resolution, and I can see the same arguments applicable to earlier we've heard during this session about resolutions to our Congress, and that we don't want to send a mixed message in that we clearly are the beneficiaries of, albeit a weak provision in the 1986 Defense Appropriation Act, and we wouldn't want to send a message that excluding this provision, if this was the only way our congressional delegation would get it through, we didn't want to protect our Alaskan workers. So I don't oppose the objections of the objectives of the representative. I do oppose its inclusion in this particular resolution from this body at this time.
Any further debate on amendment number one? Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the gentleman for clarifying, but I do think that it is pertinent that this particular amendment be added to the bill because we are talking about the DAR Fire Act for military construction in Alaska, and this has a direct implication to it. So if we sent the resolution as it is now, we may be saying we agree to what it says in the congressional record when we say we aren't agreeing with it. So I say we are sending a mixed message, very clear mixed message, that yes, we will allow union workers to be considered residents of Alaska, but no one else. That's about as mixed as you can get. Let's make it clear. If a member from the pipe fitters, if a member from 302, if a member from Teamsters wants to work in Alaska, become a citizen. We want you in Alaska. We don't mind you living in Alaska. It is not only costly that we are losing these wages, and in the book here, too, it shows of that 22% of out-of-state workers in the construction industry, they take a large percentage of the salaries out of state. Not only do they take a large percentage of the salary out of state, but currently you realize that our unemployment insurance is almost bankrupt. Look at the people who are in those particular jobs, and you see a high percentage of construction workers are getting the unemployment insurance while living out of state in the cold. They may not like to live up here in the cold. But see, it's a double barrel cost to us. Not only that they are taking the jobs from our skilled, qualified people, they're also ripping the state off for a high percentage of unemployment insurance that we pay, and that, again, does not stay in the state. I think this amendment is very apropos for this particular resolution. There's been no better place for it. Don't send a mixed message that we understand what the congressional record says, but we're going to ignore that. Make it clear. We want all people to be Alaskan hired.
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I note that the congressional joint resolution requires that the individuals, in the case of any craft or trade, possess or be able to acquire promptly the necessary skills. And, of course, that is the qualification requirement. In other words, that you wish to hire people who know the particular skill that you're hiring them for. And as part of that, they agreed in conference committee that the Senate general provision would go into effect, and that on union contracts a worker released by the union, in other words, sent out, dispatched by the union, should be considered a resident of Alaska. One of the principal reasons for that, of course, is that the union contracts in Alaska, by and large, even the engineers whose head office is in Seattle, but most specifically the laborers, the carpenters, and other unions, the contracts themselves do give resident higher preference. And those are constitutional because they are private contracts. And that is one of the greatest defenses that Alaskan workers have. And that is why you see the great interest that the unions have had in the local hire provision, precisely because over the years, the unions have, in this state, have come to be controlled by their Alaskan members, and they have, in negotiations, negotiated Alaska hire. And who are the predominant non-union construction workers? They are also predominantly the people who are brought in by the construction companies from outside. The people, for example, who built the intertie and couldn't find any qualified Alaskans to operate chainsaws, I remember, because they had their own people and they brought them in from outside. If those had been Alaskan union jobs, we would have had laborers working on that who were Alaskans and who would have known how to operate chainsaws. I believe they wouldn't have to necessarily be union members to operate a chainsaw, but the union certainly would have dispatched people who did. So I think that there is a, essentially because of this contractual arrangement in the union contract in Alaska, we're sending, to pass this resolution, we would be scrambling and we would be moving back from a position that we have achieved in local hire. The union support, the construction union support for local hire, comes about so strongly precisely because it is the Alaskan workers who have used the unions to achieve contractual local hire. And that we need to protect. Thank you.
Any further debate on amendment number one?
Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to associate myself with the remarks from the representative from Fairbanks. The fact is that I disagree with the prior assertions that the non-Alaskan construction workers can be traced mainly to out-of-state union workers. I don't think that is the fact. The fact is that many unions in Alaska have very strong Alaska hire provisions, up to requiring 5 years to be on their primary hire list. They can do that because that's private action. That's not state action. Secondly, nowhere in House Joint Resolution 19 do we refer specifically to the Defense Appropriations Bill. We're asking for general federal implication of local hire laws, although there is another matter on the calendar that targets more specifically that federal appropriation bill. I don't think it's appropriate to include something that of this nature in this particular resolution. I think it sends a mixed message to Congress, and I think it's unnecessary.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I agree with the gentleman from Fairbanks. It makes it all the more important that we add this particular amendment to the bill, because therein lies a major problem with our employers. They are forced by union contracts, even though if they had an agreement of a private contract, suddenly they find themselves with a large bunch of out-of-state construction engineers, laborers, and so forth. And they have no choice of the matter but to hire whoever the union hall sent to them, whether it came from Seattle, whether it came from Tacoma, or whether it came from Anchorage. Now, we do have three unions in the state who do have special consideration, and that's good. We ought to get other unions to do the same thing. The representative from Spinard mentioned the five-year contract. Yes, that is explicitly in the laborer's contract within Anchorage. Wonderful. We need to get more local chapters to do that. The pipe fitters from Fairbanks have a very good, I don't think it's written, but it's very clear from their agent that you better be an Alaskan resident, you better have lived in our area, and we are going to check you before you even get a job how long you've lived in our state. Teamsters, clear as can be, you have to be a member of the local chapter within our state. They fought for a long time this battle of Alaska hire, and rightly so, they finally got the rights to have their own chapter, so they didn't have to have the paternal organization from down south telling them what to do or who they were hire. So now teams are purely independent, and they are supporters of local hire because the member had to be there. This here makes it very clear that we are allowing an exemption to other unions out of state. Otherwise, why would they have this exemption in the congressional record? Let's not send a mixed message. Let's make it clear we do not agree with this particular amendment in the congressional record. I ask your support for true Alaskan hire.
Are you ready?
Could we have a brief at ease, Mr. Speaker?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we have amendment number one before us and under debate. Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the representative from Anchorage has raised an appropriate question, but I do agree with the other member from Anchorage behind me that said it's probably not as appropriate on this resolution. So I'm going to vote against it and be interested to see whether the member from Anchorage would offer one on the next resolution. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
13 yeas, 23 nays.
Amendment number 1 has failed adoption. Does the clerk have any further amendments before her on the joint resolution?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Being a joint resolution, it has to be moved to third. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution number 19 be engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objection to the advancement motion from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that resolution for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 19, Labor and Commerce, by the Labor and Commerce Committee, relating to resident hire on federal projects in the state.
Third reading, under debate. Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I've spoken to this resolution before this body previously, but as prime sponsor and chair of the Labor and Commerce Committee, I'd like to explain some of the aspects of the committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 19. The House Labor and Commerce Committee substitute encourages Congress to aggressively pursue measures to assure that Alaskans are hired for jobs on federally funded construction projects and for jobs with federal agencies operating in Alaska. Now, originally, House Joint Resolution 19 dealt solely with jobs on federally funded construction projects. When the measure came to the House Labor and Commerce Committee, it was before us at the same time as House Joint Resolution 20, sponsored by the representative from Tok, which had language including those jobs on federal agencies operating in Alaska. With agreement from the sponsor of House Joint Resolution 20, the House Labor and Commerce Committee adopted a committee substitute, which incorporated those sections of HGR 20 which dealt with federal agency jobs in Alaska. The result is the committee substitute that is before us today. Mr. Speaker, under the United States Constitution, the federal government has a much greater leeway to mandate local hire in specific regions of the nation than the individual states have. And with the indulgence of the body, I'd just like to read a quick, just a few sentences from the United States Constitution, which highlight that difference. The Federal Equal Protection Clause contained in the 14th Amendment states, "No state shall deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws." It specifically refers to state action. And the Commerce Clause, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3, "The Congress shall have the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states." Again, it specifically reserves that power to the federal government. And finally, among the triad of constitutional clauses in the federal Constitution that have given us so much difficulty in our attempts at state action to deal with the resident or local hire problem, the Privileges and Immunities Clause, which is contained in Article 4, Section 2 of the United States Constitution, "The citizens of each state shall be entitled to all the privileges and immunities of the citizens in the several states." Clearly, the first two very specifically speak to state action, and the third has been interpreted as speaking to state action. But despite this window of opportunity on the federal level, other than the current one-time provision in the 1986 Defense Appropriation Bill, we have not taken advantage of this method to put more of our citizens, more Alaskans, to work. And HJR 19 simply asks Congress to act on their ability to do so, to provide jobs for Alaskans on federally funded projects and in federal agencies operating in Alaska. And I ask the support of this body. Thank you.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I certainly appreciate the comments from the member from District 11. Mr. Speaker, I also acknowledge, too, that we have a tendency to not be as analytical on resolutions as we are on legislation, since it does not have the force of law. But, Mr. Speaker, I came on the floor today prepared to vote for this. However, I reviewed this resolution, and I do have some concerns. If you'll permit me a brief bit of latitude, I will go through those. Mr. Speaker, as we review this resolution, it mentions on line 13 through 14 of Alaska's high unemployment rate that it's one of the highest in the nation. Well, that's true, Mr. Speaker, but I share with this body that the states of Washington, D.C., which that's not a state, but at least it's a territory of sizable number, West Virginia, South Dakota, and New Mexico has a higher unemployment
particularly in construction, than the state of Alaska. Mr. Speaker, the resolution mentions on lines 18 through 20 that chronic unemployment leads to a lot of social problems, to include crime, alcoholism, et cetera, et cetera. What we realize is in this state, as all across the country, there's an increase in crime and acts against people. And whereas it may be true, there is not sufficient evidence, at least accompanying this piece of legislation, to support its inclusion into the document. Mr. Speaker, if we go to lines 27 to 29, and we speak of construction projects that are federally funded, and they traditionally account for a substantial percentage of available employment in the state, that's a very, very important point. Let's acknowledge it. We're talking about federal funded dollars coming into this state and providing employment. Mr. Speaker, we look on the second page of this resolution and consider lines 4 through 7, and we talk about permanent, temporary, and seasonal jobs federally funded in this state. And we make specific reference to Bureau of Land Management and the National Park Service. And again, that they constitute a substantial portion of jobs. Well, that's an acknowledgement. We realize that the federal government has been very supportive, putting dollars into this state, into federal programs to support employment. Mr. Speaker, I support the first resolve here, lines 14 through 18. That this legislature encourage, now, the important word is to encourage, the federal government to make available these jobs for Alaskans. Where I differ, Mr. Speaker, is the second resolve, lines 18 through 22, where we are specifically asking the Congress to introduce legislation mandating this. Well, Mr. Speaker, the representative from District 11 has talked to this body about the equal protection and the privilege and immunity clause of our Constitution. Basically, it says that we cannot treat other residents of these United States any different, particularly when it comes to federal dollars. In the Labor and Commerce Committee, Mr. Speaker, I recall a representative from the U.S. Department of Labor commented that we should be cautious with this type of resolution and this type of language. And if you think a minute, we have one congressional person out of 435. We have two senators out of 100. And much to my pleasure, they all three are Republicans. But if we consider in a national Senate, it is controlled by the other party. If we consider in the House, it is controlled by the other party. Which basically tells me that our representative on the congressional level virtually has very little power to influence certain kinds of things. I am concerned, Mr. Speaker, by sending this resolution to the Congress with this type of language, what we will indeed do is what the gentleman from the U.S. Department of Labor said. We will incite the rage of other congressmen from other sections of the country. And I think that is a disservice. We're sending a mixed signal back to Congress with this resolution. We do not have the power back there to influence it and to change this distasteful situation around. I'd ask this body to consider what we're doing. The first resolve is fine, but the second one, I think, strikes at the heart of the question. We're sending a mixed signal, and if it's taken serious back there, I think we can hurt the ability of employment, the ability of securing that support of the rest of the Congress for funding to the state of Alaska. And I just think it's not necessary at this time. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking as a representative of Brand X, the other party that just happens to control both houses in Congress, I don't think that this is a partisan issue.
I think that when a person is out of work, that's a bipartisan issue. Nobody wants to be out of work, and I know that's not what my friend from East Anchorage meant. And I don't think it needs to be sent with the message that's going to antagonize people, because people from all parts of the country understand what it means to be out of work. And I think that it can be done, and I think that it should be encouraged, because the people of Alaska need jobs.
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, appreciate the efforts of the Anchorage representative to replace our congressional delegation with people of my party, but I think that there is a much more important problem, which is spoken of in the resolves, pointing out what unemployment does to the community, the instability that it brings about socially, in the impact on unemployment, of unemployment, on alcoholism, child abuse, all of the problems that we hear, the impact on in the community. Federal construction has an impact on the community. We are told that now the Dew Line is going to be expanded by two additional sites on the North Slope, that the present plants are going to be expanded and modernized, all of which is necessary. But I think that anyone can agree that that construction is going to have an impact in the communities on the North Slope. And although the North Slope has a good income for the local government from the oil developments there, the unemployment rate there also is relatively high. And those people also need employment. What happens when the contractors for RCA or whoever builds the plant bring in outside employees into the community? That money that those people earn will not be spent on the North Slope. Similarly with the projects out in the Aleutians and elsewhere. Similarly with the project in District 17, the backscatter radar. There are people in Tok, in Paxson, and elsewhere who are perfectly capable of clearing land for the power lines that will be put up, but will they be hired unless we have some congressional action? Or will they sit there, sitting in Tok, drinking coffee at the junction of the road there, watching other workers brought in from outside and going outside with their paychecks? Thank you.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I would first of all like to note that we have one of the most effective congressional delegations of any state in the union, as we're constantly reminded. Secondly, I am going to vote for this because it's local hire, it's motherhood and apple pie. I think it's absolutely superfluous for us to tell our congressional delegation that they should be concerned about local hire. Is sort of an insult to them. They care, they're working, and we know it, but I'll vote for it anyway.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 19, Labor and Commerce, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
38 yeas, 2 nays.
Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 19, Labor and Commerce, has passed the House. Representative Navarre.
Could we have a brief at ease?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at-ease were in the daily calendar, and would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Joint Resolution Number 22 by Boyer, Donnelly, Porchot, Brown, Davis, Grunberg, Wallace, Herman, Larson, Menard, and Schultz, relating to an agreement between the Department of Defense and the Alaska Department of Labor for enforcement of the Alaskan hire requirements of Section 8078 of the 1986 Defense Appropriations Act and subsequent acts, and urging the Congress to extend the resident hire provision through fiscal year 1988. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the resolution and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, signing do pass, Ellis, Menard, Kopanen, Davidson, and Donnelly. Furness has no recommendation. I have one amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Would the clerk please make reference to that amendment?
Amendment number one by Martin to page 2, line 22, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objections, Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I say, low surprise, it's a simple amendment, but it clarifies exactly what we were talking about with the previous bill. And it seemed like that the majority who support local hire mentioned that my concern should be more in line with House Joint Resolution number 22 rather than the previous one. And so therefore, the same argument stands. If we believe in Alaska hire, we believe in all people being treated equally and not one segment of our employees being subjected to union hires from out of state. The gentleman mentioned from Fairbanks that the Tok people, North Slope people all over the state in the construction trade are in a high unemployment status today. And this in construction is the reason why. 22% of the total workforce is being hired in the construction industry from out of state. And this would make it clear to Congress that we do not want that particular amendment in the bill that is in the congressional records that specifically exclude union members.
Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I oppose this amendment, and I suppose the primary reason is I'm not sure that we've got a problem here that we're trying to fix. I'm not sure that the numbers referenced by my colleague from East Anchorage regarding the 22% out-of-state workers are union workers. And I'm thinking it sounded as if he was suggesting that those people are, in fact, union workers, and I would suggest that they are, in fact, non-union members working for non-union companies. And that's the serious problem in the state, is that we've got a lot of non-union companies bidding and controlling natural resource projects in the state and other state-funded projects in the state and federal projects as well. But more importantly, Mr. Speaker, is the issue of the report language that the previous speaker has alluded to. And as we all know, a letter of intent in this body has almost no bearing, and certainly it is not legally binding on the body or in any other shape or form. And so it's equally similar on the federal level with report language. And what the previous speaker suggested is that there is something in law that deals with union labor or union contracts or union hire and residency. And that is simply not the case, Mr. Speaker. All we have here is a fleeting reference in a hastily put together report at an 11th hour, as we all understand how some of those things happen, that makes a reference to residency and union hire. Clearly in the law, there's no reference to that. And clearly in the regulations that have been promulgated and adopted by the Department of Defense to implement this local hire provision, there's no reference to this either. And we've got the copies of these things, and if someone wants to beg the indulgence, we can certainly read from those. But there's clearly nothing in a base of law, either on the face of the law itself or in regulations promulgated, that deals with this issue. And clearly the Department of Defense is not acting on the language in the report in dealing with the local hire issue in Alaska. And I would urge all the colleagues to oppose this amendment. It's not an issue. It's not an issue in local hire. It's not an issue that at all relates to the Department of Defense Appropriations Act in 1987 or 1986. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I call the House on the amendment.
The House has been called.
Mr. Speaker, the previous gentleman mentioned that it's a non-issue. If it's a non-issue, let's make it clear. he is right that this amendment was added at the last minute by Congress. And it almost came as a surprise to our congressional delegation in the Senate, at least, that this amendment was added by the Washington-Oregon delegation in the congressional record. Yes, they say it's just a letter of intent, but we know as well as anyone else that letters of intent can be used very significantly when individuals are called, and especially a U.S. senator. If it's a U.S. senator from Washington or a U.S. senator from Oregon, he makes it very clear to the local unions, this is what we meant. Our people will be hired according to seniority, according to your union membership. If they call Senator Stevens or Senator Murkowski, they might get a different message, who makes it very clear. He wants it very clear to the Defense Department that Alaskans come first. Yes, he knows it's an embarrassment that this letter of intent's there, but at the same time, let's unmuddy the water. We want Alaskans hired. We want no exemptions. If the gentleman said that the letter of intent has no meaning, let's show it has no meaning. We don't want any reference to anyone out of state except Alaskans, no matter what segment of the body they work for. He also mentioned that the book is important to read. And I don't know who reads between the lines more than the next guy. I'm trying to stick strictly to the letter of what was sent to us, the sentences. And it made it very clear that construction workers have 21% of the wages earned in Alaska from non-residents. That's a lot of money. It doesn't even consider, and I did ask the Department of Labor in the next report, add to the fact the number of dollars that non-residents take out of state in unemployment compensation and unemployment insurance. And you'll see even a bigger bill. So if the gentleman felt that the letter of intent in the congressional record had no meaning, let's make sure it has no meaning by saying that we do not concur with it.
Okay, we have a call on the House, and if there are no objections, I'd like to move up the calendar to reports of standing committees. Are there any objections? The call has not been satisfied. Would the clerk please report the standing committees?
The House Committee has considered House Bill 130 relating to educational employees' collective bargaining agreements and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 130 Hess with the same title, recommends it do pass, attaches a fiscal note and a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by the co-chairs Kopanen and Ellis, signing do pass, Donnelly, Gruenberg, Phillips, Kopanen, and Ellis, signing no recommendation, Hudson, and signing do not pass, Hanley. House Bill 130 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
If there are no objections, I'd like to move down the calendar to introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills. Could have handled this under unfinished business, but we had an act relating to wage and benefits for certain legislative employees and providing for an effective date. That was Senate Bill 139. There'll be an additional referral there. The referral will be Finance and then the Rules Committee. Okay, that brings us back to the issue before us, and it is under debate. Representative Donnelly.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, although I do believe that this is an appropriate piece of legislation to address this amendment and this issue in, and I agree with the amendment sponsor that unions should do all they can to promote local hire, I think this particular proposal falls into the same category as some of the assertions during last year's election campaign that local hire proposals were really union hire proposals. And this is simply not a union, non-union issue. It's an Alaska hire issue. And additionally, I think an important aspect of this entire issue of union local hire has been lost in the public debate on this subject, and that is that the union contracts, the collective bargaining agreements, are joint agreements between the employers and the unions. Our employment and our business community can negotiate these provisions into those contracts just as strongly as the unions can do so.
And I submit, Mr. Speaker, that we should be also talking here not just about union hire, but business Alaska hire, because it's the responsibility of our business community within those collective bargaining agreements to seek that Alaska hire provisions be included in them. Now, the other aspect about this is that on the national level, we may lose the wholehearted support of some very powerful allies that we could pick up on this whole aspect and then work with them on promoting Alaska Hire through their organizations. And so I'm opposed to the amendment.
Okay, the call has been satisfied on amendment number one. Are you ready for the representative call?
Could we stand at ease then, please, Mr. Speaker?
Would the House please stand at ease?
Upon the argument advanced by my colleague from District 13 in support of his amendment, but let us not fool ourselves as to the effect of letters of intent.
The debate has been very constructive. I'd like to refer the members to Mason's Manual, Rule 102, which sometimes we use. Is there any member here who have not spoken upon the amendment that would care to do so? Representative Taylor.
Very briefly, the reason this debate has gone on so long is that we have been confronted in the past with statistics off of our North Slope, statistics taken particularly on the oil industry. Many of those statistics, Mr. Speaker, relate to a period in time when only union hire was allowed on that area of our state. During that period of time, some of those companies who were mandated to hire union only had up to 40% non-resident Alaskans working on those projects. I personally had friends who were returned to Southeast Alaska off the job, whose jobs were replaced during that period of time by a, quote, union worker. Now, my friends were also in the union. They were replaced by union workers out of Seattle and Salt Lake and Denver, Colorado. And an anger began to build within our society, and we were mad about it. We were very frustrated about it. And we saw the misuse of that provision occurring. Anything that we can do here today that'll prevent that incipient evil from continuing is a good stroke. But if we're going to kid ourselves here that this, because it's a letter of intent, it doesn't have any effect. If it didn't have any effect, why did the people from the state of Washington put this letter of intent in at the last moment? They put it in to protect the 302 Union for Jobs in Alaska, a union that does not have a resident office in this state, a union that historically has replaced our Alaska workers with out-of-state workers. I believe in this provision that we need to have Alaska hire. But let's don't delude ourselves on the question by saying that a union employee, merely because he has a union card from Colorado, all of a sudden becomes an Alaska resident and can therefore displace an Alaska worker. That's the evil we're trying to prevent. That's why we need this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cotton.
I, too, was going to make every attempt to stay seated on this particular issue. But I guess, you know, I don't agree that a person that belongs to a union should be considered an Alaskan resident either. But I'm confused. I don't believe that that's part of the law that Congress passed. And so when the amendment suggests that we delete the union contract exemption, I'm not sure there is an exemption to delete. But if we continue Section 8078, and that's what we're asking Congress to do, are we actually asking them to continue the conferees in intent language? I'm not sure. I wouldn't mind making that clear, because I do not agree that because a person belongs to union, he should be considered an Alaska resident for the purposes of local hire.
Is there any other member that has not spoken upon Amendment Number 1 that would like to? Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the issue is worth discussing, and I'm going to support the amendment because it's a statement that should be made. When I am not in session, I work as a vocational rehabilitation counselor, and we work with people who have been injured on the job. A significant, probably 80% of them are people who are involved in union employment. And the concern that I have is that what the representative from Wrangell stated is absolutely true. It's very often the job, which is temporarily vacated by a resident of Alaska because he or she is injured, is filled by someone from out of state. And when we try to get that person back to that job is no longer there. So it does happen a lot more than I would like to see, that we do have people from outside coming up and taking those union jobs. And I think any time we have an opportunity to say that we don't like this, this isn't an appropriate thing, I think we ought to take it. And I'm going to support the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you. I rise particularly to correct a misconception, I believe, that control is controlling part of the conversation. All of the union locals in Alaska, with one exception, have their jurisdiction limited to Alaska, have their officers and their headquarters in Alaska. The one exception is Local 302 of the operating engineers. But to say that they have no resident office in Alaska is incorrect. In fact, their local office is right down on Franklin Street, right next to the Barron's building, and the business agent there, Jim Johnson, is a friend of mine. He is from out of town originally. He's been here only for about 10 years, but he's from Fairbanks. And in fact, I believe that every one of the BAs, business agents in Anchorage and Fairbanks, where they have offices also, are all residents. And the workers that I know who go out on Local 302 are Alaskan residents of long standing. I think that's it's not only true, of course, of 302, where the whole local hire issue was fought out in the early 60s, and where the majority of membership, I believe, is our Alaskan residents. The thing is that it is a local that has jurisdiction over jobs in the Pacific Northwest, and people do go back and forth, but there too, local residents do have the preference on dispatch. All the qualified local residents go out before anyone else is dispatched. Qualification, the skill, the training, the trade, knowledge of what they're sent out to do is why the Congress put that in. You don't want unqualified people. Union craftsmen, people who've learned their trade, know their trade. That's why they call for union dispatch. You can get other people who are perhaps qualified, but you know right away that when you call for dispatch of a cat skinner, he's going to know how to operate the machine he's sent out to operate. So I think there's a total misconception about what is happening with the unions in Alaska. I think that you must remember that all of the unions, with one exception, are based in Alaska and have a total Alaskan membership. The one exception, nevertheless, has its Alaskan dispatch offices up here and dispatches primarily Alaskan workers, and in every case, the Alaskans have the first option on the job.
Okay, we have a resolution before us here. Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As a union man, a longshoreman of many years, I'd like to address the efforts to flog the union cause once again. I think there is much that many of us have to give in regards to the union efforts in our state. And to accuse the unions of non-resident hire in the early days of the pipeline, I think is misleading, because as a matter of fact, we Alaskans did not have many of those skills during those early days of pipeline construction. And I rise again to say that I think the union cause is a worthy cause, and I'm proud to be a union man. Therefore, I shall oppose this amendment.
Representative Hudson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I think half a loaf is better than none. I suspect that national politics are no greatly different than ours up in here. And I have a feeling that probably the little union intent language was probably added to gain the necessary support to put this resolution for 1986. I personally believe that the most important thing we can do is to send the message back asking for the extension and therefore gaining that.